Welcome in West Hall Gardens. Here we'll talk about symbiosis. First, I'd like to start with a quote from Trevor Goward in the book Entangled Life, How Fungi Make Our World, Change Our Minds, and Shape Our Future by Merlin Sheldrake. Trevor says, "Lichens tell us something about life. They inform us." What does happen when human exceptionalism and the idea of individualism limited by a few physical boundaries is turned upside down by scientific discoveries? Biology has always had immense power to ferment moral notions about life on Earth and has done so since the imperialism of the 18th century. Lichens are among those organisms that have shaken our beliefs, not only about the ideas of individuality, but also about sexual reproduction and heteronormative dogmas, according to Griffith. The concept of symbiosis elicited by lichens has long been polemical and has stimulated many existential questions. Lichens thus continually challenge us to question and re-examine our relationship to the world around us. I would like to introduce you to a few things that symbiosis tell us about and the role that lichens have played in the discovery of this concept. Entangled, a lichen is not one, nor two, but multiple. Lichens are composed of two types of fungi, algae and many bacteria. In addition to a disassemblage of several species, lichens are sometimes attacked by lichenicolous fungus. The photos below show different lichens type, Xanthoria, Parietina and Fischia tenella, being attacked by lichenicolous fungi, creating a pink and or orange colour. How did the idea of symbiosis come about? It was in 1869 that a Swiss botanist, Simon Schwendener, published an article introducing the double hypothesis of lichen. In this article, Schwendener introduces the notion, radical at the time, that the lichen is not one organism but many. According to Schwendener, in the lichen, the agar is the slave of the fungus and is forced to serve it. This hypothesis was refuted by lichenologists, people who study lichens, and was seen as shocking at the time. One cannot imagine two organisms living in such a close relationship and creating such a different form. Moreover, based on the idea of evolution by natural selection developed by Charles Darwin in 1859, new species were created by the divergence of species from each other. Evolution was seen as coming from competition instead of cooperation. This is an interpretation of the people at the time because Darwin's writings do not only speak of competition. Schwendener's idea amounted to creating links between different evolutionary lineage, which did not fit into the understanding of taxonomy at the time. The idea of the emergence of new species by the convergence of several species seemed impossible. It was in 1877 that the German botanist Albert Frank introduced the idea of symbiosis as the close relationship between a species of algae and a type of fungus and forming a lichen. Later, the term symbiosis would be used to describe a spectrum of interaction ranging from mutualism to parasitism. The lichen became a symbol of symbiosis and a biological principle when scientists discovered that symbiosis is not the exception but the rule. Examples include the complex relationships in corals or bacteria and other organisms in the functioning processes of living organisms. As a result, the process of evolution could no longer be seen as a race to compete, a theory that had stemmed from the misinterpretation of Darwinian thinking, but as a collaboration between organisms of several taxonomic groups. These forced many scientists to rethink their ideologies and the process of evolution. Now, let's talk about cooperation as the source of diversity of living forms on Earth. Evolutionary theories were influenced by the discovery of Gregor Mendel, who opened the door to genetics. The main explanation for the variation and diversity of organisms on Earth was related to genetics. such as genetic mutations. Natural selection acts over time on the phenotypes, the observable traits of an organism, such as blue eyes in humans, that are most adapted in the environment. This is the main idea of what is called now the modern synthesis of evolution. Meanwhile, in Russia, researchers were studying lichens and their symbiosis. According to them, competition in genetics could not be the only source of diversity. Cooperation in nature was emphasized through symbiosis, which could and does create new forms of life. The idea of symbiosis as a source of variation came to Europe in the 1970s, thanks to a woman, the American biologist Lynn Margulis. Now let's talk about the discovery of the Russians and Lynn Margulis. Living organisms are separated into three areas. Bacteria, archaea, which are unicellular organisms that have a different membrane from bacteria, and eukaryotes. Animals, fungi, and plants are eukaryotes. They have eukaryote cells. The cells of eukaryotes are larger than those of bacteria and archaea and have specialized structures such as the nucleus or mitochondria. Plants have other specialized cells such as the chloroplast, where photosynthesis takes place. The Russian discovery that Lynn Margulis brought to Europe and the United States is that the first eukaryotic cell forming the body of animals today would have been created through symbiosis between a eukaryote with a very simple structure that would have engulfed a bacterium. This engulfed bacterium would have remained in the host, and over time this symbiosis would have become permanent, surely because it was beneficial for both cells. This allowed the evolution of multicellular organisms like us. The bacterium would then be the descendant form of the mitochondria, which is the part of the eukaryotic cell allowing it to produce energy. The same process would have happened for the chloroplast in plants, with a photosynthetic bacterium that came to be enclosed by the eukaryote. This theory, which emphasizes the importance of symbiosis in evolution, was initially denied for several years before being confirmed by scientific evidence in 1970. Lynn Margulis said that the first eukaryotic cells were analogous to lichens. This idea of symbiosis has revolutionized our understanding of the natural world and has called into question the time required for the creation of new forms. Rapidly, through symbiosis, new adaptation and life forms can be created. Today, several authors, including Donna Haraway and Scott Gilbert, argue that every organism is a lichen, meaning symbiotic. This symbiosis can actually be observed everywhere. Every tree depends on its fungal network to absorb nutrients from the soil through the roots. Cows could not digest the grass they eat without the anaerobic bacteria in the rumen. But then, if it's everywhere, who is the individual? Where is the limit if every organism depends on others? I will leave you to ponder that question. Lichens are changing our perceptions of the world. Recently, David Griffith wrote an article called Queer Theory for Lichens, where he questions our ideas of individuality through the findings on lichens. He writes, "There are no universal transcendent traits that define the individual, human or otherwise. Instead, the self or individual is always contingent and context dependent. Indeed, the human gut microbiome, on which we depend to digest food, is highly dependent on the environment in which we live. The individual is thus dynamic and changes according to the context and the environment. Furthermore, in these times of environmental and social change, this new symbiotic approach to the world helps us realize and feel the connections and subtleties that we humans have with other organisms, without whom we cannot live. Finally, while from a certain perspective, the idea of individual is a concept and a category that helps human their behavior and their ideas, the notion of organism boundaries is more complex. As one developmental biology researcher puts it, we are all lichens. I hope this idea of symbiosis inspires you. I would like to introduce you to a few new species. First, in front of you, can you find, comparing with the picture on the website, Punctelia subrudecta? It's a blue-grey lichen in colour and has small dots on its thallus. These dots are called pseudocyphellae. These are holes in the upper cortex which lets the seed underlying medulla, the part with the mushroom hyphae. Coming out of the medulla are ceradia. These are clusters of algae and fungal hyphae that disperse and allow new lichens to settle. The ceradia are coming out of the cerealia and are granular, like a small powder. This kind of lichen is called Punctelia for its small dots on the thallus. You can also see the Lepraria species, which is a leper's lichen, and the leper's thallus is made of a network of fungal hyphae with algal cells entangled among them. These lichens can be found in environments sheltered from the rain. The lichen Lepraria that you can see on the picture on the website is different from unicellular algae. Unicellular algae are upper green and are very powdery, and when you pass your finger onto it, you'll get some particles left on your finger. So these are two different forms. You can see the algae without any symbiosis and then Lepraria lichen with the symbiosis with the fungus. All the references, as always, are on the website, and now we'll meet a little further on near the canal on Fontainebridge Green. You'll see the exact location on the map on the website. See you there!